Welcome to Cabeza de Vaca. Episode 10, He Who Has a Why Can Endure Anyhow. I'm Brandon Seal. Lope de Oviedo hadn't left Galveston Island since he'd been shipwrecked there in November of 1528. Maybe he had crossed over to the mainland a few times with the natives who kept him as something between a slave and a ward. But mentally, he was stuck on the island of ill fate, as his companion Cabeza de Vaca called it, and he couldn't be convinced to leave. Oviedo had been one of only a handful of men on Cabeza de Vaca's raft who could even stand up after their harrowing 2-month-long drift through the Gulf of Mexico, during which they survived on a handful of corn a day and almost no fresh water. Nevertheless, after they were thrown onto Galveston Beach, it was Oviedo who mustered up the strength to scale a tree and then go exploring for several miles. It was Oviedo, in fact, who had first found the native Cavoque village, where he, Cabeza de Vaca, and the rest of the men on the raft found refuge during that first winter. But that first winter saw 75 or so of the surviving 90 Narvaez expeditionaries on Galveston Island die of a mysterious stomach disease, along with half of the Cavoques as well who had taken them in. And as if watching most of his companions die by expelling their guts out wasn't bad enough, there were additional horrors. 5 of the expeditionaries had refused to go live with the natives, resolving to make it on their own there on the beach. It was only a matter of weeks before they had to resort to cannibalism, shocking the Cavoques and nearly leading to the executions of the other remaining surviving expeditionaries. Then slowly, over the next few months, Oviedo watched as the Cavoques turned from gracious hosts to indifferent neighbors to actively hostile masters, once the expeditionaries had worn out their welcome and become little more than useless extra mouths to feed. Then, in the spring of 1529, the mysterious illness laid Oviedo himself low. And unfortunately for him, this was precisely the moment that the rest of the 14 or so surviving expeditionaries had resolved to leave Galveston. And so on top of all the trauma that had come before, now he was to be left behind by his companions to live out the rest of his presumably short life in this strange land. In the end, though, he wasn't alone. The expedition's notary and treasurer also fell ill at around the same time he did, and so they too were forced to stay back when the others moved on down the coast. The notary ended up dying pretty soon thereafter, but the treasurer, like Oviedo, pulled through the illness. And in the treasurer, Alvar Núñez Cabeza de Vaca, Oviedo at least had the comfort of some kind of companionship, and together, the two of them adjusted to their new life. It was not an easy life. They weren't members of the Cavoque tribe by any means. They were, in their own view, slaves. Of course, their plight probably wasn't as bad as that of Native American slaves sent down into Castilian silver mines or worked to death on sugar plantations, but life was still touch and go for the two old expeditionaries. Starvation and beatings became the norm, and they were routinely assigned the most difficult tasks by their Indian keepers. After a year or so of this, Cabeza de Vaca managed to find a way out of the worst of it. He had started traveling across the bay to the mainland to trade goods between the inland tribes and the coastal tribes of Texas, who were apparently always at war with each other. Oviedo, on the other hand, was left to continue suffering on his own. His first problem was that he couldn't swim, so getting across to the mainland was out of the question. And second, at least he was kept alive on Galveston Island, if only barely. Who knew if he'd be guaranteed even that small luxury if he left it? And yet that damned fool Cabeza de Vaca kept coming back to him and begging him to go south with him. Every year he came back with the same speech, but where in the world did he think he was going? Cabeza de Vaca had no better idea than Oviedo where they actually were. Was the Rio Pánuco to their south? Or maybe they'd already passed it on their rafts and it was back to the northeast? Or maybe they were on some other continent altogether. This was the New World, after all, and nothing seemed to make sense here. Did Cabeza de Vaca not remember what had happened with all the other tribes they'd met along the Gulf of Mexico? How they had turned on them? Why did he think it would go any differently for them now? What did he make of the fact that they never heard back from the four swimmers that they had sent ahead back in November of 1528, or the other castaways who had left in April of 1529? And so, even in the spring of 1532, 3.5 years after he had first landed there, Lope de Oviedo lingered on the island of ill fate, refusing all of Cabeza de Vaca's repeated pleas that they venture south together. For whatever reason, Lope de Oviedo's transformation over these years recalls to my mind stories of certain prisoners of war and concentration camp survivors that I've read. The principal one that comes to mind is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. Frankl was an Austrian Jew who studied and practiced as a psychiatrist in pre-war Vienna. But he was arrested by the Nazis and eventually sent to the Auschwitz death camps, which he managed to survive. And there's a lot of similarities between Frankl's and Cabeza de Vaca's accounts. For example, the first thing that Frankl talks about upon arriving at a concentration camp was that he, quote, struck out my whole former life, end quote. Which is to say, he makes himself psychologically naked, as it were, and actually physically naked as well, as he describes being shorn and deloused as he entered the camp. Similarly, almost as soon as he is shipwrecked on Galveston Island, Cabeza de Vaca casts aside all thoughts of his previous life, even as he too is made physically naked by the waves destroying his raft. Something that's always struck me about Cabeza de Vaca's account is that we never see him engaging in what-ifs. What if he hadn't joined the Narvaez expedition? What if he'd accepted Narvaez's offer to stay with the ships back in Florida? What if he had stayed at home with his wife and had a family instead? Of course, that train of thinking is about as useful as wishing that the sun didn't rise in the east and set in the west, and so Cabeza de Vaca doesn't allow it. We've already seen in the previous episode, for example, how Cabeza de Vaca is able to sort of distance himself from his despair. He refuses to dwell on it, even as he doesn't hide from it. And this too is important, according to Viktor Frankl, to not, quote, minimize or alleviate the camp's tortures by ignoring them or harboring false illusions and entertaining false optimism, end quote. Oviedo, by contrast, looks much more like the camp inmates that Frankl describes who came in full of vigor and who tried to resist the horrors of their experience with sheer willpower. Willpower runs out, however, and those men who came in so strong were soon reduced, quote, to a primitive level, end quote. The second similarity that I find, anyway, between Cabeza de Vaca and Viktor Frankl is the way that Frankl talks about, quote, turning suffering into a human achievement, end quote. Here's more explanation. Quote, when a man finds that it is his destiny to suffer, he will have to accept his suffering as his task, his single and unique task. He will have to acknowledge the fact that even in suffering, he is unique and alone in the universe. His unique opportunity lies in the way in which he bears his burden, end quote. This is how you give suffering meaning. And meaning, for both Frankl and Cabeza de Vaca, really comes from service. Frankl continued as a practicing psychiatrist in the concentration camps, even as he was being worked to death nearly every day, which makes him sound like Cabeza de Vaca, who never forgets and who in fact opens his account with a plea that his story be, quote, received in the name of service, as this is all that a man who emerged naked could take out with him, end quote. For Cabeza de Vaca in those first few years in the New World, the clearest expression of that service was in the responsibility that he felt for his fellow expeditionary, Lope de Oviedo. Frankl, too, would have recognized this, stating at one point in his own account, quote, a man who becomes conscious of the responsibility that he bears toward a human being or to an unfinished work will never be able to throw his life away, end quote. Cabeza de Vaca refused to give up on Oviedo, which meant, too, that he refused to give up on himself. Despite Oviedo's stubbornness, Cabeza de Vaca returned year after year to beg him to come with him. Caring for Lope de Oviedo is what gave Cabeza de Vaca's own suffering meaning during these first years. And finally, eventually, something that Cabeza de Vaca said, or maybe just the example of service that he set, changed Oviedo's mind. In the late summer of 1532, after 3 years of begging, Cabeza de Vaca finally succeeded in convincing Oviedo to head south with him. We don't know exactly what he said or how he did it, but by the fall of that year, they were actually moving. Through Cabeza de Vaca's activities as a merchant, he had learned something about the tribes ahead along the Texas coast and how to move amongst them. He had also observed that women in particular seemed to be permitted greater freedom of movement in this land, owing to the continuous state of war that existed between the various tribes of the region. So when he and Oviedo decided to leave, he actually hired women as guides to help lead him along and communicate with the tribes that they might encounter. And so with that, they were off. Call it September of 1532, they crossed over to the mainland. Then, in quick succession, they crossed four more rivers, ending up after a few weeks near the Colorado River, perhaps not terribly far from where it empties into the Gulf Coast at Matagorda Bay. And as they arrived on the south bank of the Colorado, they came upon some Indians who seemed to be inclined to talk to them. This may not have been surprising on its own. I mean, after all, Cabeza de Vaca and Oviedo were curious-looking creatures to the Native Americans, with their beards and pink skin. Yet there was something about the way that these natives looked at them, almost as if they'd seen them before or something. So cautiously, Cabeza de Vaca approached and began to converse with them, perhaps through the women he'd brought along as guides, or perhaps using signs that he'd learned as a trader. The Indians told them that they were from the Quevenes tribe, further down the coast, and they offered them a tantalizing piece of news. There were, quote, others like them, end quote, being held by a tribe not far away. And even better news, that tribe was heading toward them right now. They were coming to the annual nut harvest down near the mouth of the Guadalupe River, just 2 days' march from here. And, the Quevenes reassured them, if Cabeza de Vaca and Oviedo continued on, surely they would be rejoined with the three others like them in no time. Wait a minute, only three? We thought there should have been many more, Cabeza de Vaca responded. Oh, yeah, the others are long dead, the Quevenes said. Hunger took some, the winters others. Three had been killed, frankly, just for fun, and two had been killed because one of the Indians in the tribe had a bad dream about them. And the three survivors, the Quevenes continued on, were also, quote, very poorly treated, since the boys and other Indians, who were quite abusive and hostile to begin with, frequently strike them and beat them with sticks, end quote. Oviedo freaked out when he heard this. It only confirmed his worst fears. At least back on Galveston Island, he knew who to avoid and how to act to stay alive. Why in the world had he given that up? What did he hope to gain from this voyage? The entire Narvaez expedition had been cursed from the get-go, it seemed, and why couldn't Cabeza de Vaca just accept this? And then it got worse. The Quevenes began to beat the daylights out of Cabeza de Vaca and Lope de Oviedo. In Cabeza de Vaca's words, quote, they slapped and beat my companion, and I received my share as well. And they threw mud at us, and they held arrows to our chest, saying they wanted to kill us just as they had our companions, end quote. What in the world happened here? How did this turn from a friendly exchange of information into an assault? Unfortunately, the narrative doesn't really tell us. It's as inexplicable to us as it probably was to Lope de Oviedo, to whom it served as just another example of the capriciousness of this, quote, foreign and evil land, end quote. Cabeza de Vaca, on the other hand, saw things differently. He offers us a really odd and almost funny explanation for why these Native Americans beat them up. He says that it was, quote, so that we might understand that what these Indians had told us about the poor treatment of the others like us was true, end quote. It's such a charitable and seemingly reasonable explanation for an assault. Yeah, they weren't really trying to hurt us. They were just trying to make sure we understood what an assault was. You almost wonder if he's being sarcastic or humorous here, but I don't think he is. Because notice how this fits in with what we've already observed about Cabeza de Vaca. How he refuses to dwell on despair, and how increasingly he refuses to attribute bad intent to those who do him wrong. And notice too what an incredible change this really marks in Cabeza de Vaca. 5 years ago, he was a typical petty middle manager, chafing at his commanding officer's slights and engaging in bureaucratic turf wars. But now, he seems to have some new, more mature perspective on dealing with the arbitrariness of life. It makes the contrast with Lope de Oviedo even starker, however. Because after the same beating that Cabeza de Vaca explains away so charitably, Oviedo gives up, turns around, and goes back to Galveston Island. In truth, he'd basically already given up hope before he had even left Galveston Island. But he had allowed himself, or been convinced by Cabeza de Vaca, to believe just one more time that he might be able to escape his miserable situation. Yet the Cavenas had just dashed that hope for him. And suddenly, Oviedo was more convinced than ever that his suffering would never end. He gave up all goals, other than mere survival. A life of known privation and quasi-slavery was preferable, was rosy even, when compared with the uncertainty of what lay ahead. Cabeza de Vaca tried to intervene. Quote, "I begged him many times not to do it, and I tried many different arguments, but I couldn't stop him. And with that, he returned, and I stayed alone with those Indians," end quote. Viktor Frankl tells a similar story about the fate of one of his fellow concentration camp prisoners who one day had a dream they were going to be liberated on March 30th, 1945. This prisoner came to be as sure of this fact as anything in his life, as if God himself had promised it to him. And that's what this prisoner used to sustain himself for the next few weeks. But when the 30th of March came and went without liberation, quote, "he became delirious and lost consciousness. On March 31st, he was dead," end quote. It's an exaggerated example, but it sounds a lot like what happened to Lope de Oviedo. Men like this in concentration camps, Frankl tells us, quote, "preferred to close their eyes and to live in the past. Life for such people became meaningless," end quote. Lope de Oviedo is one of the most fascinating characters in Cabeza de Vaca's account, because in my opinion, he's actually the character that I find easiest to relate to. And be honest with yourself, how would you respond if you lost every material comfort you had come to take for granted and were thrust into a situation of total dependence on people who were indifferent or even hostile toward your continuing existence? It's Cabeza de Vaca who really is much harder to understand at this point. How is he still even alive? And what gave him the motivation to keep moving on? What in his experience suggested to him that this next attempt at movement would turn out any better than all the past ones? And what allowed him to endure his captivity with even spiritedness, to still be able to impute benign motives in the actions of some guys who had just gratuitously beat the hell out of him? A clue to what keeps Cabeza de Vaca going is what he does once Lope de Oviedo leaves him. For the past several years, it had been his sense of duty to Oviedo, his service toward him, that had given Cabeza de Vaca's own hardship meaning. And fortunately for him, as we just heard, just before the Cavenas Indians beat the daylights out of him, they had given him something else to latch onto. Three more companions of his, held captive just up ahead. With this, Cabeza de Vaca is able to redirect his sense of service away from Lope de Oviedo and towards these new three. And it's probably not a coincidence either that at this point in the narrative, something recalls to him the original charge that he had from the king. Quote, "even though the hope I sustained of ever leaving there was so slight, I took great care and diligence to commit everything to memory, just in case someday our Lord God should desire to bring me to where I am now, I would be able to bear witness of my goodwill and service to your majesty," end quote. So it's not just service to his companions, it's service to his king that he thinks about right now. And it's service to one more being as well. As has become clear, it is Cabeza de Vaca's unwavering and unshakable belief that whatever he suffers is in the service of his God that gives him the ultimate comfort, that allows him to move past each trauma without having to hide from it. And now that we've laid them out, service to man, service to king, service to God, we have, in a way, sort of restated the Castilian mandato real from episode 1, the defining ideals of this age for men like Cabeza de Vaca. So now the question was, who were these three surviving expeditionaries who came to represent for Cabeza de Vaca the sum of his hopes and the continuation of his service to his fellow man, to his king, and to his God? He recalled the Cavenas' words, quote, If we wanted to see the other Christians, in 2 days they would be there with their Indians to come to eat nuts along the same river where we found ourselves now. End quote. In 2 days, then, Cabeza de Vaca would find out on the next episode of Cabeza de Vaca. Thank you for listening. I want to follow up on a recommendation that I made after the last episode. I'd like to specifically recommend that you check out the Bill Witliff Collection website at Texas State University. As I mentioned in the previous episode, Texas State has really owned Cabeza de Vaca, and the Witliff Collection in particular actually owns an original copy of a 1555 edition of Cabeza de Vaca's account. They've digitized it and translated it, so you can see it online. And though they don't have any interviews with Cabeza de Vaca himself, they do have the next best thing, according to Witliff Collections director Steve Davis. A series of interviews with now Texas State Historical Association president Frank de la Teja, where he discusses Cabeza de Vaca and his legacy. You can check them out for yourself at thewitliffcollections.texasstate.edu. Editing for this episode was performed by Susana Canseco. Sound engineering by Stephen Bennett. The music for this series is entitled Apache. It was composed by Kevin Graham and is available on Soundstripe. A special thanks to Father David Garcia, Dr. Frank de la Teja with the Texas State Historical Association, to Steve Davis, curator of the Witliff Collections at Texas State University, to Professor Andres Resendez at the University of California, Davis, to Dr. Carolyn Boyd with the Shumla Archaeological Research and Education Center and also Texas State, and to David Dunham, Texas Monthly, for all their support and suggestions. You'll hear more about them throughout the season. And for more information about us and our other projects, you can check out our website at www.brandonseal.com.